that would lead me to believe that somebody who would be considered as an elder in the Lord's church has proven some kind of time management, because he is not so busy out here earning a living or doing whatever he does in the community that he has not nurtured the relationship with his wife. He has not nurtured the relationship with his children. You see, he somehow, some way, he's managed his time. Managing time is a very important part of what we do. I think it's interesting when you talk about prioritizing your time, and I've talked to you about this before. Next slide. This really, part of this comes from Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I've done a little adopting here, but you know, Covey's trying to get you to think about it from a business standpoint and how to increase and improve your productivity from a day-to-day basis. But I think that the value of this time matrix here is the idea that if we honestly think about it, we prioritize and we spend our time. We have so much of it, and it has to be divided in so many ways. And there are four basic categories. There are things that are very, very urgent and very, very important, and you got to get on those things. They cannot be delayed. They cannot be postponed. In some cases, they cannot be delegated. You got to do it. But then there are other things, honestly, that are not urgent, but they're extremely important. I think maybe this is the one we have the most difficulty with. Sometimes we don't see something as important because it doesn't have urgency to it. Reading your Bible every day. Well, let's think about that from the standpoint of importance. It's pretty important, isn't it? I mean, you feed your soul, you feed your mind, you feed your heart, you build your faith a little bit. Would you agree that that's important? But the problem with it is, and the reason most of us don't do it, is because that has no sense of urgency. That's not like a dirty diaper that needs to be changed. You got to get on with that program, don't you? That's not like somebody demanding your time. It's important, but it's not urgent, you see. That's probably where we fail the most. It's things that are important, but they have no sense of urgency about them. And I liked, even in a business context, that Covey says, bring that kind of thing forward. Move that thing up on your list. Give that thing the importance that it deserves. And so you and I, you see, as we take our 24 hours a day and we're dividing it up, how are we going to use our time? Sometimes it's going to grab us. We got to do it. It's an emergency. We got to act on it. We don't have any choice. Sometimes, though, it's important, and we need to put it a little bit higher in our priority system. Now, the other two areas here, urgent but not important, that might be a little bit harder. I mean, that's registering for the chili cook-off down in Texas. You know, I got to have my registration in by such and such a date. And that's urgent, but whether or not I get that done is really not important. You see, there are things that fall in that category. One of the great mistakes we make is we think something is urgent and very, very important, but it's not. It might be urgent because it has a deadline, but whether or not we get it done, it really doesn't matter. Isn't that what you parents have noticed about your teenagers? This is one of the problems that teenagers have. It's the idea that something is extremely important to them, but you know it's really not that important. I mean, I've used in my teaching in my class, talking about the brand of jeans I wore as a teenager, and those cheapo jeans my parents bought me weren't good enough. I needed some better ones, and I was told basically I could get some better ones when I figured out how to get the money to get some better ones. And something was really, really important to me, and something they said was not quite so important to them. They knew better than I at that time. But still, to me, it was important. Urgent, not important is a problem for us because we think it is important. And it's really not. And in your time management, you got to make some decisions there. And then there's not urgent, not important. I mean, that can be delayed. And if you're looking for some time savers in your schedule, maybe you need to go and figure out what's not urgent and what has no importance. And maybe you can drop that stuff and get on with other things in your particular schedule that has more urgency and has more importance. Patterson wrote a little book called Time Management, Philip Patterson. He said, when Jimmy Johnson took over as the head coach of the NFL's worst team, the Dallas Cowboys. Now, some of you that aren't the baby boomer that I am, y'all may remember when I was a kid, the Cowboys were fantastic. I mean, they were America's team. And I never liked their present owner because he got rid of Tom Landry. And, I mean, how can you fire Tom Landry? But he did, and Jimmy Johnson took over. Jimmy Johnson had a 5-year run with the Dallas Cowboys. And he was one of those coaches. He ate and he breathed his job. He had previously been with the Miami Hurricanes, the college team. Done a fantastic job, made them nationally prominent during the course of the 80s. About 89, Tom Landry's out, Jimmy Johnson's in. 5 years, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Jimmy Johnson coaches the Dallas Cowboys. Was he successful? Well, by one definition, yes. He won 2 Super Bowls. And many nights he slept in his office. In the 5 years, he became estranged from his wife. And they divorced. In that 5 years, he became estranged from his grown children. And they were having enormous relationship problems. In that 5 years, 2 Super Bowls now, he lost his job. Right now, Jerry Jones will not put Jimmy Johnson's name on the Ring of Honor down there in that Dallas stadium. He says, because I don't like people who are disloyal. Johnson, when he left, he was arguing with the owner of the team as to who was going to make some decisions on player personnel. Isn't that interesting? 5 years, total dedication, 24/7. 2 Super Bowl wins, but a lost family. 2 Super Bowl wins, but a dream job that ended. 2 Super Bowl wins, but he's labeled now by the owner of the team as being disloyal. Something's wrong with that kind of time management. We get in problems sometimes, you see, when we flip-flop things around and we think it's urgent and important, but really it's not even urgent. Or really, it's not even important. Patterson goes on to say, it seems to me that earning a living and being a concerned parent and enjoying hobbies and volunteer work, these are all means to an end. But there are excesses and deficiencies on each side to be avoided. Don't earn so little that your family lacks. But don't spend so much time pursuing financial success that you neglect the needs of your family. Don't be a stifling, overbearing parent, but don't be an unconcerned parent either. Don't smother your mate, but don't ignore them either. Don't be stingy with your time, but don't give away too much of your time either. Don't lust after wealth, but don't neglect to provide for your family. Probably the greatest thing we need in prioritizing our time is balance. And you determining, I can't determine it for you, you determining what's important What kind of priority does this deserve? Honesty would demand of us that when you ask me, have you done such and such? And if I say generally, no, I haven't done that. I haven't had time. Honesty, the better honest answer probably is, no, I haven't done that. I haven't prioritized that enough. I've chosen to spend my time on other things. We need honesty when it comes to time management. And deciding what's important and what's not important is extremely important in time management. Well, let's think a little bit about what did Jesus do. Some of you have heard me say this in various classes. The Bible is just not chronologically written. The Bible, time is hard to follow in the Bible. I mean, this thing skips around. There's big old blocks of time in there that are basically unaccounted for. I mean, if you're looking for chronology, I mean, some things are a little bit out of order. And most of this is the result of the Bible. It's not by design to communicate to us a chronological report of things. It's by design to communicate to us the way and will of God. And when you follow it through, you'll find there's gaps of time in there that sometimes you can account for a little bit and sometimes you can't. And I was looking at John 1 particularly, next day. That's the time reference. That's the main time stamp in John chapter 1, the next day. Remember a few weeks ago I was talking about apparent time and mean time and how we took morning, noon, and night, and we attached a clock to it, and now we're talking hours and seconds. Well, chronologically, by the time you get to the New Testament, you'll see first hour of the day, third hour of the day, 12th hour of the day. But a lot of the references of the New Testament are early, late, morning, noon, night, next day, next day, next day, next day. Maybe 3 days. Here comes John, the one who baptized, and he's saying, I'm not worthy to untie his sandals. And the next day, he sees Jesus, and he tells his disciples, behold, the Lamb of God. And the next day, we're 3 days in now, there are some disciples that go up to Jesus, and Jesus says, what do you want? John chapter 1, verse 39, somewhere around there. And the disciples say, well, where are you staying? And then Jesus says, come, and you will see. We don't know where he was staying, by the way. At that particular time, we don't. And so he says, come, and you will see. And he invited them, and they spent the day with him. Now, there it is. Spent a day. How many times have you spent a day with somebody? I mean, when I was a kid, we were kind of at the end of some of this. We had some distant kin that we loved very much that lived down in Franklin, and seems like things got so busy at my parents' house that maybe Sunday afternoon was the only time that we could go down there. And then later on, my dad and the rest of the family wouldn't go, but my mother would go. And I enjoyed riding down there with her. And all we did was go down there and go into the living room and just sit there and look at each other, talk. We didn't spend a day. We spent an hour or two. When was the time you gave somebody a day? A day, a full day. Now, this says it was about the 10th hour, but they spent that day. Well, the next day, there's the fourth next day, they're off to Galilee. Enormous amount of time was spent by Jesus with his disciples. And it's hard for you to track it through the course of Scripture, but it's there. The other one I'll give you is up in Matthew chapter 17. Matthew 17 is That passage where they're going up, Peter and James and John, and they're going up on what we call the Mount of Transfiguration. You may remember that's when Jesus appears with Moses and Elijah, the great prophet, the great lawgiver. Great, great, enormous lessons there. Well, we look at Matthew 17. That's what us preachers talk about, is the Mount of Transfiguration. We look at Matthew 16, and we talk about what happened in Matthew 16. And that's where Jesus is telling his disciples, you beware of the leaven of the scribes and Pharisees. And by the way, Jesus says, when I talk about bread, I'm not always talking about the physical bread. I'm talking about spiritual bread. And by the way, what are they saying? And Peter makes that great confession, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus in Matthew 16, he talks about his death and burial. I'm going to go and I'm going to suffer and I'm going to be crucified. And you may remember in Matthew 16 that basically Peter rebukes Jesus when Jesus even thinks about dying. It's not going to be so, Lord. And basically Jesus says, you need to get that thought out of your head, Peter. That's what I've come to do. All of this happens in Matthew 16. And then in 17, after how many days? 6 days. It looks for all the world like we got a stretch of a time period in here where 6 days. I mean, my old maid great aunts in Franklin, we did good to get there an hour a week. Spend a little time with them. Then we're talking about Jesus spending a day with his disciples. Now we're talking about a 6-day period in which those guys have basically spent their time together. And as I said, it's hard to put all the chronology together, but not all of that was busy time. Sometimes that was just Jesus and those disciples. And so Jesus uses his time, you see, and he has blocks of time when he goes and prays alone. He has time when somebody invites him into their house and he goes to the house of sinners. He has time to be in the multitude's healing. He has time to spend it alone to nurture his disciples, just him and them, and talk about things. He allots and manages his time. And he probably goes through the same process that you and I. And I guess one of the things I thought about, and I mentioned this in the bulletin article this morning, I don't know if you realize this, but a lot of preachers spend an enormous amount of time being frustrated over time. I mean, it's like if I'm locked in that office studying, is that where I need to be? Is that what I need to be doing? It's very frustrating sometimes to know exactly how to spend your time. I remember as a young preacher during my first tour of duty, so to speak, I spent an enormous amount of time visiting people, going morning, noon, and night. Man, I was everywhere all the time. And I spent much less time studying because at that time, I thought, that study time, you know. I can't be in that office while there's folks to be seen. Then somewhere along the line, there was some shift in prioritizing time. And it's like, hey, if you're going to stand on your feet and talk to people, you better have something to say. And the only way I know to have something to say is to prepare. So maybe when I'm in there studying, I might think, should I be out there visiting? And I guess I kind of project that to Jesus a little bit. I wonder if he ever, I don't know, y'all. I'm just thinking out loud. I wonder if Jesus ever said, well, here's what I'm doing, but I wonder if I ought to be doing this. If he spent 6 days with his disciples, uninterrupted days, days of conversation, days of teaching, if he spent 6 days, Did he ever think, oh, but there's villages I need to go see because they don't know there's a Messiah that's on the earth? I wonder if he had any guilt or frustration about how he spent his time. The other one is John chapter 4. I'll give you that one quickly. That's the woman at the well. Disciples have gone to town. She's had 5 husbands. They have this conversation about where to worship, Mount Gerizim or Jerusalem. She's Samaritan. And Jesus says you need to worship in spirit and truth. And he talks about living water. And man, she's convinced he's somebody. And she goes back to Zychar, that little village, and she says, let me tell you, I think I've met the Messiah. Y'all know the guy, the Messiah? I think I've met him. He's out there by the well. John chapter 4 says many people believed on him because of her. And you know what Jesus did? It's an amazing story. John chapter 4, verse 40, when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed with them 2 days. When was the last time you gave 2 days to anything? I bet you have given 2 days. Well, I shouldn't bet. But I imagine you have given 2 days to something, and I bet it was something you really loved. I bet it was a big old ball game or a great big race. Or maybe some kind of event. I bet you've given 2 days to something. Here was Jesus, a Samaritan village, half-breed people. They have Jewish blood in them, but they also have the blood of all of those people who moved into the land when the Babylonians took over. They were despised by pure-blooded Jews. Nobody wanted to talk to them who was Jewish except Jesus. The disciples have probably not even seen or recognized this woman. And here is Jesus not only talking to her, but letting her witness for him. And now these people, these half-bred Jewish people, come out and say, Lord, we think you might be the Messiah. Will you hang out with us a little while? And this man who was extremely business-oriented, who had the job of convincing the world that he was God in the flesh, what did he do? He took 2 days and spent it with them. And by the way, his disciples, if you left it to them, they probably wouldn't have spent 5 minutes with Samaritan people from the village of Sychar. But Jesus spent 2 days with them. Isn't that interesting? Probably the greatest example of Jesus and time management is Luke chapter 10, verse 38. That's our text. You're familiar with this. Bethany, Mary, and Martha. We presume Martha's the oldest one because it kind of appears to be her house, and it kind of appears like maybe she's the hostess. And all of you women know what being hostess is. That means the dirt in the farthest corner of the house. I mean, when you got company coming over, you got to clean behind the commode in the bathroom on the far corner that your guests are never going to see. But you got to get rid of that dirt because you got guests in the house. And everything has to be dusted and everything has to be polished and everything has to be perfect. We think Martha is the hostess here. We think it's probably her house. Why do we think that? Because she's the one who's cooking and cleaning. She's the one who is concerned that everything be exactly so. And I might add, there's a passage, I chose not to quote it to you, but I could paraphrase for you. It's the other one from Patterson's book about how much fellowship we're missing as the people of God because we insist that everything be perfect before we have fellowship. And that includes sometimes our house. Our houses are generally not open to each other. Well, why aren't they open to each other? Because for you to come to my house, that's bothersome to me because I got to clean everything. Everything's got to be just perfect. Well, no, it doesn't have to be. Maybe pick up and straighten up a little bit. I've been uninvited many a times from going in somebody's house, and generally speaking, it's probably because if you show up unannounced, they're like, I don't want you in my house because I haven't cleaned. I got stuff laying around everywhere. It's cluttered. Well, I understand that. I feel that same way. I'm not knocking this. I'm just telling you. But that's Martha, isn't it? You've got Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, living water, living bread. You drink and eat, you never thirst again. That's who's in your house during the 30 plus years of his time here on earth. That's who's in her house. And she's getting the dirt out of the corner of the kitchen. And she's concerned that the meal be just exactly right. But she's got this kid sister, this irresponsible kid sister, this person who is not the hostess, and she doesn't have to be concerned as to whether the house is perfect or whether the meal is perfect. And what is she doing? Nothing. Well, no, wait a minute. She's doing something. She's sitting at the feet of Jesus. She's just sitting there. She's just listening to him. Now, this is where we Americans with this Puritan ethic, those of you that were taught that the idle hands is the devil's workshop, those of you who were taught that you got to work and 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 you got to work some more, and you better not be lazy, because the minute you become lazy and slothful, you're going to fall off into sin, and then you're going to fall off into the pit of hell. Those of us who were taught that, we have a lot of trouble just sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to what he has to say. Is that not the scene of Luke chapter 10, verse 38 through 42? The difference between Martha and Mary. Jesus and his disciples were on their way. They came to a village. A woman named Martha opened her home to him. Well, congratulations to Martha. Martha's fantastic. She's hospitable. We congratulate her for that. But she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister's left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. I wonder what Martha expected Jesus to say. I wonder if she thought Jesus would say, okay, Mary, you better get up and help your sister. She's having to do all the work here. What did Jesus say? What did the guy say who had one six-day stretch? Some say it could have been as long as 8 days if you piece together a couple of passages from Mark and Luke, who spent 6 days uninterrupted with his disciples, who spent a full day with the newest disciples sent to him by John the Baptizer, who spent 2 days with the people of a Samaritan village who were thinking they might believe that he's the Messiah. How did Jesus answer this question? He said, Martha, Martha, you are worried about many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen that which is better. She's chosen that which will not be taken away from her. Interesting. Jesus seems to have a mindset here that Martha didn't have. Now, before we're too critical of Martha, we all have a little bit of this Martha problem in us, don't we? I assure you, every one of us, like Martha, have confused what's important versus what's not important with our time. I have, plenty of times. Many a time. I thought something was very important, later to find out it wasn't important at all. I've got a Martha problem. She's not the first one that misses the opportunity of a lifetime. I mean, you think about this in context. The Son of God, God in the flesh, sitting in her home, and she's washing dishes instead of hearing what the man has to say. She missed an opportunity. For all of us who are time squeezed, let's ask a couple of questions and then the lesson will be yours. And everybody in here is time squeezed, especially those of you who have wife and kids and you choose to serve in this church family. Maybe you teach a class. Maybe you assist in visiting. Everybody in here is time squeezed to some degree. Some of you, according to your phase of life, are time squeezed more than others. Two questions that have to be asked. First, before giving away my time, have I considered my spiritual health? This is a biggie. We tend not to prioritize enough when it comes to doing the things to feed our souls. For whatever reason, we just let that one slide. Get to the game, see the game, get to the job, punch the clock. Wouldn't dare be late for Little League. Wouldn't dare let little Johnny, who signed up for this team, miss a practice. Everybody's got to do their homework. But sometimes spiritually, we can let that one slide. We don't need that. It's not really important. And we don't say that, but that's the way we treat it, you see. And the reality is that we must ask the question, what about our spiritual health? You want my time? Okay, I'll give you some time, but not to the neglect of my own spiritual health. I mean, you're talking to a guy. You're not talking to him. I'm doing all the talking, it looks like, but you're listening to a guy who at one time was a father and husband with two babies and president of the Gainesville Evening Optimist Club and president of the North Georgia Bible Camp and a minister of the gospel. And the reality was, it was one of the worst periods of my life because I didn't know what was important and what was not important. Didn't know how to prioritize my time. Man, that civic club was pulling at me. That Bible camp was, I mean, we were deep in debt and had no money, and my name was on the note. It was one of the names on the note, and they weren't getting any money out of me because I didn't have any. It's a busy time. A lot of driving through the mountains of North Georgia at night. A lot of late night meetings. A lot of late night visiting. Didn't know how to prioritize my time. You got to prioritize your time. How are you spending your time? Is your spiritual health being taken care of? And that leads to the second question. And it's the huge one. Before giving away my time, are the spiritual and emotional needs of my family being met? Huge. Huge. Spiritual and emotional needs of my family being met. When I do premarital counseling with guys, and I aim at those guys because I am one, I want them to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they have a responsibility for the spiritual and emotional well-being of their wife. They got to know that. And I guarantee you, ladies, if you were out marrying somebody and you brought some old scrubby-headed boy in here to marry you and he wouldn't affirm that he had that responsibility, my advice to you would be don't marry him. Because you have the responsibility to your family and to your spiritual health. That's job one. That's priority. That's urgent, important. Nothing else. Nothing else. Did I say it? Nothing else is important, is as important as your spiritual health. And if you've chosen to have a family, the spiritual and emotional health of your family. If you have a hobby in your life that's taking you away from that, get rid of it. Change your time priorities. If your job is stealing you blind when it comes to time with your family, find something else to do. You need to make sure that the top priority of your time management is your own spiritual health and the spiritual health of your family. Last but not least, there's that old scripture out of 1 Timothy 4, verse 8. Last slide. We like this one. Well, I didn't put it up there. I thought I did. It says, bodily exercise profiteth little. We like that, man. That's good. I don't bodily exercise because that one gets rid. That one demands too much from me. But it says, in contrast to bodily exercise, it says, godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. That passage doesn't tell you not to exercise. That passage tells you to give yourself to something that has value in this life and in the life to come. Are you doing that? Are you doing that? I can't do it for you. I can't tell you how to manage your time. I can give you these pointers. We need to manage our time, folks. Next Sunday, we're going to talk about waiting on the Lord. It's the hardest thing you'll ever do is have to wait on the Lord. The lesson is yours.